Blog Talk Radio. Breaking news.
Ushering in a new era. This is the War of the Words.
What's up, guys? Thank you for joining us for the second edition of our Cerebral Sundays, man. I'm always very excited about this specific episode, you know, since we started doing it. I totally have to change the intro music. It's so aggressive. It's so fight-oriented, you know, which is opposite. Like, I had to come in with the NPR voice and, like, more of the words, Cerebral Sundays. Thank you for joining us on the show today. Comedian, aspiring singer-songwriter, modern-day philosopher Joseph Coker of the Joseph Coker Podcast. That'd be awesome. I'd just do the whole show that way. but thank you guys for tuning in, man. We've got a great guest. He's actually already here. I'm going to bring him out in just a second. Joseph Coker, for you guys, go online, go to Facebook, type in Joseph Coker Podcast, man. Check it out. This guy is one of those guys that has more going on than I do. So, you know, without further ado, let's add one more thing to that plate and make him a guest on War of the Words. Joseph, what's up, my brother?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me, dude. I really appreciate it.
Always. It's something that we definitely talked about before, and I'm sure that this will be far and away. I got a feeling this is going to become a reoccurring thing. I just got that feeling.
Yeah, well, that could be love that you're feeling. it could be. I don't know. I mean, time will tell, but I have that feeling too, man. No, I think it's so fun. It's fun to be on someone else's show. It's way less work. I'm just fucking talking on the phone. This is great. I love it.
Exactly, man. That's why when people get in touch with me and they're like, hey, man, you want to come on the show? I'm like, fuck yeah, I want to come on your show. I do even less work than the work, a little bit of work I do on mine.
Well, I'm the laziest podcaster in the world. Like, I don't know, like, the talking part I love. I love talking to people. I love meeting people. But if I have to, like, make one link, I like, melt down like a fourth grader doing math. You know, like, I'm just like, it just drives me crazy. I don't know why. It's just that it's the detail thing, you know.
Why does the internet not do what I want automatically? Damn it.
I know, you know. You know what's funny is I used to have, I lived in Denmark for 5 years, and I had a, the oldest phone, like, money could buy. Like, I had to, like, fill it up with gas before I made a call on it. It was
wow.
The worst piece of crap.
Wow.
It was terrible. It ran on Steam. And I just lived that way for a long time. Like, people would try to send me, like, one of those pin locations of where they're at. I'm like, that, you might as well just make me guess where you're at. Like, I have no idea. You know, but now that I have an iPhone, like, if it does one thing incorrect, it's just like, it makes me sad for a minute. I'm like, this is, I have gotten used to the luxury, and it's so embarrassing. It's so embarrassing when you realize that you're not as grateful as you should be.
Yes, that we all have the great Library of Alexandria, like, right in our hands. And isn't it funny when you, like, leave the house and you, I wrote a paper about this last year about us being, bionic. We're already cybernetic in a way, and one of the examples I used was, how don't you have, like, phantom limb syndrome when you leave your freaking phone at home? You're just like, from all life, like someone took a piece of your brain.
What does cybernetic mean?
Cybernetic, you're like Terminator. You're part organism and you're part machine. And the idea was that we have our phones with us to an extent that they are indeed a piece of us. And the example was, what happens when you take your cell phone and you leave it at home, that feeling of helplessness, it's like being locked out of your car. It's like how you feel before surgery. It's terrible, you know, for most people anyways.
it's really bizarre. And, you know, every now and then I think, oh, man, I'll just go through a fast with it and I just won't take it into restaurants or whatever. But when you're trying to build a life, you know, like, you have a podcast, I have a podcast, you know, businesses, whatever – part of the expectation with people nowadays is that you get back quick, especially like with me, like with all the stuff I'm doing, like I'm not a name yet. So if someone writes me to play this gig or to come teach class here, I pride myself on writing back immediately. And I couldn't do that if I tried to do this like Tim Ferriss, like, you know, use my phone once a week kind of thing. Like, if I would like to go to that because I bet the quality of my life would go up. I bet I'd be a better listener and stuff. But instead, I'm slowly becoming like an ADHD child, you know?
No doubt. It's like, listen, my handsome ass, it makes me more impressed with my handsome ass grandpa who also had polio and could conduct business. I don't know how the hell he did it. I don't know, like, how he managed to build an empire like he did, because I'm looking at it just like you are. Like, the opportunities fly by so fast. If I can't send a text in 20 minutes, I might not get it. But my grandpa Joe built his coal empire off freaking parchment.
That is so crazy. Like, wait, so he was in the coal industry?
Yeah, think about this, man. You know, we're talking about business and something that, you know, a perfect example of what you're talking about. Someone tries to hit you up for a show. They're looking to fill a spot. They message you. You don't have your phone. Imagine if you had to write them a letter, how fast that spot would get filled before the letter got there. You know, but we go back a little bit, and this is how everybody's grandpa was handling game, and it was working. Like, it's just pointing to that gratefulness, you know. You almost forget that you have a power in your pocket that is literally more powerful than every business that almost ever existed. It's strange.
Well, you know, it's funny, the thing you said about a letter. I can't remember who I was talking to, but they were saying this, that, like, in an older time, the letter was the email. That's how everybody did everything. And now, if you get a letter from someone, it is always bad news.
it's creepy. I get creeped out. I get creeped out. Like, if you write me a handwritten letter, instantly when I open it, I'm like, stalker, and I have to read it to make sure you're not.
Yeah, it better be a thank you, or it better be that you're in love with me. Other than that, there's going to be like glued letters from a magazine in it or something.
Like, someone needs to put this in a trash bag, heat up some super glue. I need fingerprints immediately.
It's so disturbing.
I wanted to. There were an interesting article I read this morning, and the way I do my podcast is that I try to prepare for them as little as humanly possible. That's when I get the best out of myself as a person. It's weird, but if I prep, the show is so mechanical because I force myself to try to ask these specific questions. I'm like holding the conversation within this certain balloon, and if more gets put in than what I'm trying to, it pops. So I try to just do it off the cuff every time. So, of course, Cerebral Sunday, why would it be any different when it comes to thinking than to have something planned, right? So, in that organic note, I saw an article this morning, and I wanted to ask you about it because I like going left field. The article said that there is water in the center of the earth. And when the earth formed and was swirling around, that water was the first thing that came together. And then in this new discovery, I haven't had a chance to totally check it out and make sure it's 100, but it seemed pretty reputable, that there was water in the center of the earth. And that being in itself is cool. But what I wanted to add to the conversation was that right under it was this is the explanation for Noah's Ark and the flood. And this is where the water came from, the center of the earth. And it was back. Which was the counter argument going along with this thing I read this morning. And I totally want to put you on the spot with this and ask you what you thought.
Well, I mean, I know that crazypreacher.com has some really good articles, but I haven't read that one in particular. that's the thing, you know, I used to be very religious when I was younger, and to me, everything, was together. Everything had to be 100% true. Like, the earth was made in 5,000 years. You know, gay people had a psychological problem. You know, like all these old school kind of views. And if one of them wasn't true, then everything, you know, wasn't true. And I just remember the first time I was in Denmark and I read the Wikipedia page for evolution. And I was like, oh, shit. None of this stuff I believe is real. Damn it. You know, I was like, oh, maybe there's some explanation. And then, like, And then I started, like, kind of, like, you know, like looking at how other people explain, you know, I believe that the Jewish culture, that's one of their theories, is that the earth isn't old, but it was made to look old, you know, or something like that. And I don't know. I mean, I guess for me, it's that, you know, God knows. Who knows what happened a long time ago? And most religions have some kind of story that's very similar. Maybe there was a terrible, terrible flood, and there's some badass dude who built a boat and saved enough people to where his village, you know, could live. I mean, for all we know, that could be true. But it's such a nice luxury when it doesn't have to be true in order for your worldview to hold together. You know, if I found out tomorrow that Noah's Ark was real, okay, cool. You know, but if I found out tomorrow that Noah's Ark was definitely not real, you know, I'm still going to go get a coffee and, like, go hang out with my friends. You know, like, there will be no mourning for it. You know, like, I don't know. That's kind of where, I guess, my thought on it. What did you think when you read it?
Oh, see, and this is why I love you, man. You actually asked me a question back. It's amazing. amazing how that works. Well, to touch on the flood, you know, story itself, you know, there are several older versions that happen on a smaller scale, not so much a world flood, but, you know, like the Nile, Mesopotamia, crust, flood myths, where farmers would, you know, build these rafts and put their animals and stuff on it, and it would flood, and then it would go back down. These usually happen in 4-year cycles. But to the actual question, I find it interesting that a god would put a bunch of water in the earth and, like, I'm going to pocket this for when these guys clown around. When that happens, boom, out the pocket it comes. And then even cooler, like a Ziploc bag, when I'm done, I'm just going to put it back in there for the next time they mess around. So,
yeah, you know, that's so weird. That'd be like if you got married, but on your wife's side of the bed, there's just like a fucking shotgun that's cocked right underneath where she's being like, you know,
just
what?
So y'all know.
Fuck around. Just so you know, all right? Next time by fire, I'm going to burn the house down.
Exactly, man. It's just an interesting thought. I always find that, can science and religion go together? Yes. You know, religion has an interesting way of, at the same time, having these very fundamentalist principles on one side. But then, as long as you don't have the book open, you know, it tends to be all about love and whatever they feel like at that moment. And not to say that's good or bad, but that's kind of how it goes. To actually look at it scientifically, the fact that all these things can happen with or without, I think is a strong argument. And it's kind of like that saying of the power of yes and no. You know, I'm a big proponent of this. You know, saying yes means you definitely know, and saying no also means you definitely know. And I kind of like to ride the maybe train up and downtown. You know, maybe is much more interesting and a beautiful way to live, in my opinion. You know, you don't have to. Some of these things you don't have to know. Me and a buddy of mine were talking about morals the other day. I'm doing a debate, and I was kind of preparing for it. And you know, he's a religious guy, and I asked him,
"When are you doing a debate? I have to go to this."
It's in about 2 months.
Where?
What is it? I think it's called CSU. It's
holy
here in,
shit! You're doing a debate.
It's a Christian. Yes. So, obviously preparing, right? And one of the things, matter of fact, this comes from Christopher Hitchens, something that I myself cannot claim full credit, but I asked him, like, you know, what moral standing as a religious person can you take that me being a non-religious person cannot take? And I think it's a strong question when you really think about it, because I've yet to find one.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good one. But the problem with debates, because, I mean, when I used to watch them as a Christian, and when I used to, you know, I used to watch a lot of them when I was still very religious. But I guess, to me, the problem with a debate, I mean, first off, that's pretty damn cool you're doing it. But I think the problem with it is that you're never going to swing someone who has so much tied up in being right, you know? If I found out tomorrow.
No, absolutely.
I, you know, as you know, I do jiu-jitsu, and if you ask me what's the best grappling martial art, I would say jiu-jitsu because I love it and I teach it and I believe in it. But if I found out tomorrow that Sambo was actually all around better, I might still like doing jiu-jitsu, but I have enough distance from jiu-jitsu at the same time that I could say, oh, okay, well, maybe they have a better way, you know. But the thing is, like, if you are a Christian, it has to be true. It's not a maybe. This is not like, well, which internet company goes faster? It's like, if this internet company doesn't go
well
as fast as I think it does, it's over. Everything I know is over. Everyone I know is a liar. All the songs we sing are lies. And that's a lot of pressure. And it's a psychic pain that somebody doesn't want to go through, and I don't blame them. So it's like they will contort themselves intellectually to not give you the credit for your point, you know?
Oh, yeah. I that's it. You know, when I go, usually things like this for me, and I could agree, I think that was one of the most well-versed sayings of describing a debate. The only thing I would add is that it, you know, no matter what we're talking about, it puts them on an even plane when they not necessarily or not always are a balanced and equal situation. But I usually when I do things like this, it's for the people that are sitting out there. It's not so much to tell this guy across from me, hey, you're wrong. It's more like I want to bounce through speaking to him information to everyone out there. You know, that's how I try to think of it. Like,
smart.
You know, I want to, because I know I'm not going to convince him. He wouldn't be showing up if he was anything less than 100% sure, because I'm sure, you know, that's going to be his goal. I mean, you know, that's part of what he's supposed to do. And I always find it interesting how science-y these things get. And when I have these about how something that in a regular day-to-day context is so, you know, like you said earlier, fundamentalist and straight from, but then when we start talking about the science aspect, all these energies and other words come along, and it's a very interesting topic that will probably go on forever.
What is the debate like? Usually a debate kind of works around a certain question, like, is there a proof for an existence of God? Like, what is your starting question that you guys are going to debate over? And who is the person you're debating?
His name is Thomas Banks, and the topic is, what is a better explanation for the presence of life? So I've been doing a lot of abiogenesis studying. I mean, how do I get into anything? I was online. I was online, and I believe it started from being in a forum that was at the time I didn't know that was actually attached to the university, and they were looking to do. At first, it looked like some kind of panel conversation, but as the conversation went on, I now believe it'll be just a two-podium, just a two-podium style, which brings a lot more, you know, on my side. So, been trying to prepare. Of course, like I told you earlier, man, you know, I always work best off the cuff, so just try to read and get what I can in, and not be the thing that's interesting about this, Joseph, I want to bring this up, is that when you're an atheist, it is a weird life to live, in the fact that and I will not compare it as in the same, but, you know, I can understand why people who maybe have interracial relationships that they don't want to tell their parents about, or homosexuals who have to hide things about themselves. It is a difficult life to live in a common, especially down here, in society, to just say that openly, or just to even admit it or say it, it can damage your business. It, like, say on Facebook, or there might be people listening to the show today and say, oh my God, Eric is atheistic. Screw him. I don't want to do business with him anymore. It's a dangerous thing in a way to admit about it. And I think that not a lot of people see that aspect of it, that there's this shadowy nature, which you have to either take it or, you know, accept everything that comes along with it.
Well, you know, I think there's two parts to that. One part of that is anytime you're really expressing yourself, whether you're like using the phrase coming out loosely, if I'm coming out as, okay, I want to be a songwriter now, or I'm coming out, I want to be a dancer. Anytime you've realized a deep truth about yourself and you're going to the presses with it, so to speak, you are going to feel self-conscious because you feel very sure. But what you're not sure is about how people will respond to you. So part of that is that, you know, part of that, like if you come out as a Buddhist or whatever, part of that is just that human thing where you feel insecure. But the other part of that is exactly right, which is you're saying, which is there is an extreme bias. Like when I was younger, you know, like when I was like, I don't know, 15, 16, I didn't really know that much. The internet wasn't really a big deal yet. Like I thought that an atheist would be like a loose cannon because, theory, they have nothing, they have no moral compass. They can do whatever they want because there's no God that's going to punish them in their own mind. You know, that was kind of, but that's kind of how I thought about things. You know, it's just weird how,
sure,
and it, how your mind develops. It's weird that I would think that about another human being before I even met them, you know.
Well, I think, yes, and I think what makes it even more interesting is you also have to turn around and ask yourself, just based on the comments that you yourself just made about, you know, if how could this moral compass be there if they weren't afraid to go to hell, in essence? So it brings you back to that question of what is being moralistic? Are you doing it out of a fear of something that will happen if you do not, or are you doing it because you simply know what it is? It's kind of like that old saying, you know, how did all the people get to Mount Sinai to receive the Ten Commandments to know killing is a bad thing if they didn't know that till then? You know, plausible to see that people would just be killing each other. So how'd they even get there as a group without murdering one another? And I think that holds true, you know, or in that conversation. Are we doing it because we're scared of the repercussions, or because we want the rewards, or are we just simply doing it because it's what's correct? And as being as a child with what you were speaking about, I think that makes it even more interesting, that perspective you just laid out.
You know, it's just bizarre. The one thing that I could never get over, you know, back when I needed Christianity to be right. Like, I mean, just to clarify, like, I'm with you in the maybe thing. Like, I would consider myself religiously indifferent. There might be a God,
yeah.
But whether that God cares if I, like, jack off or, like, wake up early on Sunday, like, I really don't think that's high on his priority list, you know? Like, I don't think those are the things that he's like, oh, now you ruined it, man. Now you ruined
Joseph, it. My man, I had you on the track, bro. Keep your pants on. Sorry, hell.
I just can't believe, like, and when the one thing I don't envy about religious people is that they put an extremely high amount of pressure on themselves. You know, I mean, just think about this for a second. You know, in the Christian community, they talk about being Jesus to people. And that's a beautiful thought because Jesus is kind and loving. But if you look at the backside of that, that means you're going to try to be a God to people. You know? That is a high standard, and you're never going to meet that, and I know they know that, but it's just crazy to think like that, and it's an excellent way to always feel bad about yourself, you know?
And yeah, well, I there's a ton of sexual repression that happens in that community as well, and I love the Jesus thing too, you know, and I want to switch over in a second, but I love that Jesus is so kind and wonderful and turned the other cheek. I was just doing some studying last night, you know, I always like to have material there. So, you know, of course I've got a Quran, a Bible, all these things. I don't just read, you know, one side of anything. And I think it was Luke 19:37. Jesus is saying like, hey man, look, you go out there, anybody who doesn't believe in me that you find, you bring them here to my feet and you kick their ass right here in front of me.
Yes.
So and check it. I could be wrong. I believe it's Luke 19:37 for you guys want, or 27. If you guys want to check that out, but I'm pretty sure he's like, listen, man, I turned the other cheek a couple pages back. This time, time to throw down.
Well, yeah, it's crazy, and it's just, I guess the thing that I can never get my head around is the dichotomy within religious people. Like, for example, my stepdad is one of the most beautiful men that I know. Like, you know, my own dad, you know, is an amazing man in many ways. The guy that's my stepdad, he's not even, like, really my stepdad. He's just, like, he's been in our family so long. He's tight with my mom. They're close. And I love this guy so much. I admire him so much. And at the core of all his actions is his belief in God. That's what motivates his generosity. That's what motivates his care for people. I've never seen another person. Like, he's taught me another level of how to care for people. It's amazing. Like, I'm so inspired by that. But on the other hand, I know, as I'm sure you probably do too, like, people who've been, like, routinely raped by Christian leaders and, like, terribly exploited, you know? And it's such a weird thing to live with, you know? And people say, oh, well, they're doing it poorly. Well, I don't know. Like, maybe they're, you know, like, I definitely think, you know, religion can change people. You know, I definitely have known people that used to be on drugs, now they're not or whatever. I don't know. It just seems like so much energy goes into it. And if you put that energy into anything else, like when I was less religious, I felt like I got out of homework for the rest of my life, you know, because when you're religious, it's like you need to have quiet time every day, you know, whatever. And then
like, oh, I got out of homework for the rest of my life.
It's like when you're in summer school and you realize that all the grades are averaged up. You're like, wait, I don't got to do any more of this shit. Like, this doesn't count towards anything. Like, what am I doing?
Yes.
I
would agree completely with that, man. Listen, that's one of the beautiful things that I always like to point out. Like, can religion be inspirational and lead great, you know, people to do great things? Of course it can. Do I also imagine that if religion was somehow vacuumed off the earth, that people would still do great things? Very much so. I know people find many different avenues, and that what I think you might find with a lot of people who are very religious is that you find the same amount of people that are doing it for equally tons of other reasons that are doing great things or bad things. You know, there's religion. It's kind of one of those old sayings, you know, to get a good person to do something bad, you need religion. Well, that's not entirely true. It's more like if you want to get a good person to do something bad, you need a terrible idea that feels great. So the category is actually a lot bigger than just religion. I mean, it's like the whole world is atheist to 99%. Of all of man's gods, if you go up to any Christian today, they can easily see all the other religions around them are phony and fake. Easily. Matter of fact, it's one of the key things they do. So I find it interesting that they don't ever look at it in a mathematical sense where they say, man, you know, I know for a fact that 99%, or I tell myself this, that every other religion is wrong, and every religion that's ever been, not just currently, they're all wrong. So I'm going to go with the 1% because mathematically the 1%, I mean, it's an interesting thought. When you look at it like that, it's like, how do you not go with the 99? You know?
Well, yeah. Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question, Eric. I have this, you know, you said that, what if you wipe the world of religion? I have this theory that if you took away religion, like if tomorrow we blinked our eyes and there was no Christianity or Buddhism, and there never was, my thought is that people would find something else to worship. They would worship fruit. They would worship, you know, and it's one of those kind of like tacky things that Christians say, but I really do believe it that, like, for some people, jiu-jitsu is kind of their religion, or for some people, eating healthy is, or getting laid is their religion, or whatever. Like, don't you think, though, that if you took away religion, people would make a new one, you know?
Yes, I do. I absolutely believe that. I also would add an additional that I do appreciate all the inspirational aspects that religion has brought to us. There are many great discoveries in science. There are many great arts of the humanities and other things that have come from religious inspiration that are pure and are good. It's definitely not I don't want anybody out there to say that I'm smashing on it. I just, it's more of a concept of, I do believe what you said is true. I do believe that we could live in a world where it didn't exist, and yes, we would probably have a worship of something else. It is in our nature. And I actually have always kind of felt like religion is one of those primitive parts of our mind that we have yet to been able to kind of break ourselves away from. It's not too many people are very comfortable with the idea of like, hey, listen, science is science, life, you know, the universe is indifferent to you. If you live, great. If you die, That's great too. I mean, the only reason we're here to observe it in the first place is because the conditions were right for us to be here. That in itself is not proof of anything, you know. So I find that very interesting. Go ahead.
What do you hope happens when you die?
I use that term just in common speech, so please don't take depth to it. But I believe that we are all molecular and atomized creatures, and I think that those structures will dissipate and be brought into other things. You know, we are the things that are in us have been in stars, have been in fish, have been in the ground, have been in this, and I think that will continue. It does sound a bit like being reincarnated. There we go. Yes, it kind of whispers of reincarnation, and I think maybe in a way it is. You know, my body dissipates, it goes into this and that, these things eat this, these things absorb that, and little pieces that once were me spread back out in the world. But what I try to realize is that before it was me, it was a bunch of other stuff too. So I guess at best, if we could somehow grab all the ingredients that were me that have been dispersed and put them all back together, maybe I could be reincarnated. But I guess when I die, to me, I mean, I feel like me as a person and the functions that I have within me would cease. And, I mean, sleeping and darkness and all that, you know, this whole idea that, you know, religious people say, oh, well, doesn't that sound horrible when you die, that's it? I think hell sounds pretty horrible, and I think heaven is described as a place where you go to eternally worship someone sounds pretty awful too. So, you know, I don't want to spend the rest of eternity, like, praying. It sounds heinous. you know, there's, like, this giant celestial dictatorship that, like, commands that when you die, you come up there and empower it with your soul by constantly praying to it, you know.
It'd be way less fun than it sounds.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, a couple years back, my brother, who's 34, he was very religious, and he was, you know, the best dude I ever knew. He passed away suddenly of a heart condition that nobody knew about, not even him himself. He, like, died playing basketball, surrounded by doctors. You know, like, there's a doctor, there's someone doing a CPR course on the same court that he was on. There's a doctor in the gym where he was at. It was like just one of those when it's your time to go things. And I'll never forget when I was flying over for the funeral. It dismembered me. I was so destroyed by it. But I'll never forget, like, I pulled out a journal and I wrote down all the things that he was never going to get to do anymore that we had talked about, like him writing a book or him having a kid or him, you know, doing this, going there, doing this. And I, like, in my own way, was going to, like, try to find a way to, like, honor his things that he would never get to do by doing them in my own way. You know, so, like, he was never going to compete, like, in karate ever again, obviously. So I was going to find a way to compete in jiu-jitsu and not be afraid, you know. And I honestly believe that is the answer. Because it's funny, you know, like, I'm not really sure what happens when I die, and yet I spent most of today looking at my fucking Facebook, feeling sorry for myself, you know, because, like, I had one good show last night and one, like, okay show. It's like, what a fucking waste. And then I looked on CNN today, and I saw this article about that plane crash in, Spain or wherever, Germany, and what happened was that there's two pilots, and one of them was mentally unstable, and he let the main pilot go to the bathroom. And then and then when the main pilot went to the bathroom, he locked the door and crashed the fucking plane. And the main pilot was banging on the door. And it's like, life is that fragile. And whether you believe in a heaven or whether you're not sure, you owe it to yourself to live the fuck out of this life. You know, because there's nothing, you know, we have no other surety than that. This, I'm sitting here right now talking to you. This is our chance, you know?
I agree with that 100%. And I think that, you know, that's a beautiful way to look at it, and a lot of that stems from, you know, as you go back in time, the theory of give me your life here and I'll give you great things in the next life. Well, it has always been rooted in a control mechanism and a way, you know, the old pharaohs would say, hey, man, look, we want to need to get some things built around here, and if you do this, I know your life sucks right now, but I swear there'll be tons of golden chicks. when you die later. So just give me this now. And you're able to basically turn a civilization into an automated machine, which is what a base part of slavery is, whether it's mental or physical. And now I think that carries on. And as we get more modernized and things get more gentle, and when we move away from barbarisms and things that 200 years ago we could do no one bat an eye at, especially in a religious atmosphere, we most certainly can't. Today it's all become very rhetorical. And I do want to switch over a little bit. I have a totally another question, but I want to end on this. It's one of my favorite quotes. It's from Epicurus, if I could say it to you, Joe. It says, is God willing to prevent evil but not able? Then he is not omnipotent. Is he able but not willing? Then he is malevolent. Is he both able and willing? Then whence cometh the evil? If he is neither able nor willing, then why anyone call him a god? And I think it's something that people should think about.
Crazy. I like that.
Yes. Well, thank you. You know, the basic idea, you know, if a God is so loving, why would he make everything on a knife's edge, I guess, would be the breakdown of that. Why would things be so on such a tight line that in either direction is utter chaos? It's an interesting question, man, I want to switch the tracks, man. I definitely want to talk about your podcast and your the stuff you do in the community to talk about waste, switching the tracks. Because, you know, I see you all the time. You know, we cross paths and stuff. And I know you go out there and you do something that a long time ago I tried. I'm a musician myself, but I'm definitely like an internet house musician. and stand-up comedy, which I try to slowly, you know, I did before a little bit, and I try to feed it into doing weigh-ins and stuff. But you actually do a lot of really cool stuff that I think is cool. You're like my coffee shop hero. I would totally put a poster of you on my wall. And I want to hear that coffee shop hero, bro. I just branded you. Done.
That's I'm putting
it's time. That's the name of the
right
first album. Yes. And I just wanted to be enlightened a little bit about that, because I myself haven't had an opportunity, although you've asked me a number of times in my life. It's crazy. But I definitely wanted to hear about that, man, and how you get into that. You mentioned earlier about challenging fears and facing things. And I can know from standing in the middle of a cage in front of 1,000 people, those fears, man. So I just wanted to ask you about your journey into, you know, facing all these things and getting up there and sharing your ideas. It's not an easy thing.
Well, I think for me, I started comedy last year in September. And the reason I started was because I got my heart broken by kind of the music community in Charleston. You know, I had been really invested in this one venue downtown, and they slowly became a less and less cool place to be around. And, I was seeing this girl who worked there, and then they started treating her poorly. And I'm the kind of person that, like, if you're against the person that I care about, now you're against me kind of thing. But the irony of it, you know, long story short, was she ended up going right back to them. And, like, so I lost all my community there. And she's like, no, I'm not so bad. You bitch. Like,
there's another lesson anyway. In there. We'll hit next Sunday.
Oh,
next Sunday there's a second lesson in there.
Yeah. Well, so there's that happened, and then you know, I was in a band, and then they just kind of mysteriously stopped having me play. And by the end of it, I just felt like just kind of torn up. Like, I started the year with such high hopes with music, because I write a lot of songs. I've always done that. I started playing guitar when I was 13. I still play. And, you know, but then so I was just torn up. So I always wanted to try comedy, and I was so burnt out with musicians and music shit. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll try this. And I went to the open mic at the Sparrow, which is my neighborhood in North Charleston. And I'll never forget, like, watching people get up, because some people were terrible. And then some people get up there and they have it. You know, they might not have it, like, at a pro level, but you can tell that they are going to be something one day. And so I came the next week and I tried it, and people were really nice to me. You know, like, I think I had some things that were okay funny, but I often think that being funny on stage, it's like doing magic on a stage, where it's like if we were hanging out and I did a card trick for you right in front of your face, you would be really amazed. You'd be like, oh, my God, that's so cool, because you weren't expecting a card trick. But if I got on a stage with a deck of cards, you're like, oh, God, asshole. With a deck of cards, you know, you're like, now you're watching my hands.
I'm already looking. You're already looking for holes. You're already looking for the mess ups. You're predisposed to pick it apart. That's an amazing thing I have not thought about. That is so true. That crowd is predisposed, especially in a comedy, or just to add it even more so, less music, more in the comedy. They're actually predisposed to be like, this guy's going to suck. And you have to prove the opposite, as opposed from starting to a neutral ground.
Yeah, and it's a very bizarre like willpower thing where, you know, like with music, I can go into any room. I believe in myself so much, and I believe in what I've created so much that I'm going to go in this room, and there's two things that are going to happen. You're going to like what I'm playing, or you're going to just leave. You know, like you're just like, I'm not going to be belligerent about it, but like I there is no question about whether this is good enough for anybody. I have zero questions about that in my mind. So you either like it or you go do something else. You know, but with comedy, I'm not there yet all the time. Sometimes I'll tell a joke and I'm like, man, that's really funny. And other times I'll tell a joke, I'm like, I just want to crawl under my sweater until everybody leaves. But it feels so good. It feels so right to me, and I it feels very natural. Even if I'm not great at it yet, it just feels natural to me to get up there. And I'm also surrounded by a lot of really funny people: Jeremy McClellan, Mike Brocky, Neil Banzel, Taylor Rizzo. There's Michael Clayton. There's a lot of super funny people in our community. I can go on and on. And they kind of have taken me in, and they, you know, everybody's been so kind to me, you know.
That's awesome, man. I say go forward with it. Definitely. I know my routines back in the day. I could agree not to talk about myself, but they are. It is exactly like I used to tell this routine about how a dentist was full of shit and a bear was very honest, and compare the two. About going to the dentist and coming face to face with a bear, and you know, like, you know, bear never lies to you. He's very upfront about how he intends to kick your ass with these tools, where a dentist is very opposite. Sometimes it would kill, and other times it would totally bomb. I used to tell this one about when I was young. My mom, she would let me go out to parties. You know, when I came home, she'd always smell my clothes and stuff and try to figure out what the hell I was doing at these parties, because I'm 15. You know. And, you know, like everybody else, I'm spraying cologne on in the car and, you know, trying to mask it, which only draws more freaking attention to yourself as you learn, as you get older. But she got this routine now where she would smell my hand. She would smell my fingers. And you'd catch me off guard, like, every time. I would freaking forget, man. I'd come in the house, she'd be like, let me smell your fingers. Ah, damn it, man. So, you know, she'd smell it, and you smell whatever, you know, weed or cigarettes or something. And all I could think as I got a little older was, I'm really glad my mom did not pull the same routine when I went on dates, because I would have spent a lot of time in my bedroom.
That's like some therapy shit if she did that. You know, you're like, you went out with Jesse, didn't you? Come over here.
Yeah. And this joke, the reason I'm telling it to you is because sometimes that joke right there would annihilate a room, man. People go crazy. And other times it would be quiet, like, your mom sounds like a messed up bitch.
Well, that's the thing that I love about comedy, is that it's so much about telling the truth. You know, like last night, one of my friends got up and he has a hurt foot. And so he like brought a stool with him on the stage, and he sat on the stool the whole time, Taylor Rizzo. And he got up there and he was really funny. I think he probably had one of the best sets of the night. But he does his whole thing about sucking dick, about how, like, anytime, you know, like, I don't want to ruin the bit part, but he just goes on and on about, like, sucking dick, and it's really, really funny. But then his manner is, it's very, like, quiet, it's very composed, there's lots of long pauses. And so I just got up and I made this joke about how he looked like a Seacoast youth pastor's last day on the job. He's just like, someone in here is going to suck my dick. You know, and it was funny because, like, he didn't do anything bad, but it was just, you can tell, I think comedy to me a lot of times is about saying what everybody else saw, or saying something that nobody else saw but now they can see. You know, it's one of the two. It's like the obvious thing, we're like, wow, that was terrible. Or, you know, here's two things that are connected that you didn't realize, you know.
I would agree. I said a long time ago, and I by no way claim this is my own words. I'm sure someone much greater or smarter said it before me, but I've often said that comedians are the true prophets of our societies, and that they are the only people that tend to lead us to these deep truths about ourselves and our environment, and do so in a way that doesn't pull us apart. It brings us together. Comedians have this great magic to unify us through humor about something that if we brought up in different ways, we may very well fight over and all kinds of stuff. But through that light of laughing together, we can all